Hello, everyone, and welcome back. It's Richard Lannan for Set for Success, where we help you create a roadmap to transform your business, career, or life. Establishing a business takes guts, and maybe, just maybe, the right amount of crazy. It does, if you think about it, because you can always just go get a job, you know, and if you're fortunate, you get a career, and if you're really fortunate, you love what you do, you have some passion for it, you care about it. You have a regular income, and you don't have to carry the burden of keeping something going 24/7. The journey of an entrepreneur is paved with peaks, valleys, and detours. And I know you've heard me say this lots of times, peaks, valleys, and detours. Along the way, you learn some stuff. Maybe you learn a lot of stuff about your business, about you, about the things you need to do to continue to generate your business, to grow your business. In today's fast-paced and sometimes frantic hustle and bustle, we lose ourselves and miss some of the things we need to keep doing in order to grow our business. It's sales, it's market presence, it's brand. We get sidetracked. I often say to clients, business development is all about the way you get your work. I know, that sounds like common sense, but a lot of business owners don't spend enough time on those things that they need to do to focus and grow their business. They get caught up in the everyday activities. They operationalize themselves when sometimes they need to be focused in other areas. Sometimes they're creating a job for themselves when they should be creating a business that thrives beyond their own existence. One thing that comes to play is your long-term success in sales and marketing, you know, where you know what you're going to focus on to continue to grow and grow your business and to work. That is to get work for you, your business, and more importantly, for your people. So your people do stuff. They have things to do that provide value added for your total customer satisfaction. I think those are one of the places we can start to work on and maybe talk about in our business today about growing our business. This is often done through sales and marketing. And as part of that process today, we're going to focus on one of those words with our guest, Paul Provost, CEO of 6P Marketing, where creating connections that generate results count. Paul, welcome to the show.
Morning, Richard.
Paul, it's always a pleasure to have conversations with you. You're one of those people that I could literally sit down with and hours later would go by.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's just talk about you a little bit, Paul. So let's give our listeners a little bit of history about who you are and sort of where you're from.
Sure. I'm from Winnipeg, and I've spent the last 20 years in the field of marketing. I have a Bachelor of Commerce from the Asper School of Business. And spent the better part of 10 years working in the industry side with printing companies, pre-press, and then finally in the agency world. So personally, I'm a booster of business and Winnipeg in general. And really what I like to think that I do is I just help good people with their businesses and help them to grow them.
Now, how long has 6P Marketing been around?
Funny enough, we're celebrating 10 years this month.
So. That's pretty amazing, eh? So back in 2007, you opened your doors.
Correct.
And how many people were you at 2007?
Zero. Myself.
Started out. One person, eh?
That's right. Yeah, just from the ground up. And here we are with 20.
We have 20 employees now.
We have 20 employees now,
That's actually pretty amazing itself. I want to go back to the early days. So I'm going to make you think back because, I mean, you know, being 10 years in business and you decided to start your own thing, why did you start your own company?
I think I thought I wanted to get to this in the sense that my mantra was really to get to helping other people. And I saw marketing as such an important piece to that puzzle. You know, cash flow management is absolutely fundamental to a successful business, but so is, as you said earlier, you know, getting your funnel or your business development cycle going. So that second piece was the one that I saw a big opportunity in the market with. So in terms of how companies could actually do that. So I set that process forward for myself in terms of setting the skills that I could learn and then ultimately opening an agency that could actually deliver on it.
So your early days... yourself out of your house, or did you like rent an office somewhere?
I was very short in my house. I found too many distractions. So okay. Just knowing myself, I had to get out of there very quickly. So
where'd you set up originally?
Originally, it was actually my father's business. So my father had a travel agency. And actually, in the show that we did together in 2014, it was more about the sort of family dynamics of entrepreneurship. But needless to say, he supported me for the first few months. And then we shortly thereafter moved into a business center on Osborne Street.
Okay, so was that the South Osborne location that
yep.
I visited?
Yep.
I'm just sort of I want our listeners know a little bit about this, because where you end up in your business, I sometimes wonder if people hesitate because they first start off themselves, right? And then maybe they go somewhere else and they sort of hesitate about finding that next location
sure.
to where they're going to actually hang their hat, so to speak. So how did you go about finding that location in South Osborne? I know I'm making you think back 10 years.
Well, I think it was just through conversations. Okay. A lot of it is instinct. I mean, I got to know Daryl, who was the owner of the building, and he had some space available, so he welcomed me into the building in a sense, and I paid rent, and then, you know, it just sort of evolved from there. And more recently we moved to the Exchange. We had one of our clients owned a number of buildings downtown. They had a space available that was the right fit for us, and again, it just seemed like a natural extension. It's always a struggle to know where to go, but you know, you make that leap of faith, so to speak, each time.
And away you go. Yeah, I know I'm bringing you back into the earlier days, but I think part of the journey, right, of actually being an entrepreneur is getting things going.
For
and
sure.
then sort of getting your first contract or a client, and then from there getting your first employee, right?
For sure.
So I want to jump. I could go first client or first employee. I think I'm going to go first employee. What was it like getting your first sort of employee?
Well, that was definitely a mental. It was a mental leap of faith for me. I was comfortable with what I was doing, but I got to a point where I just couldn't do it by myself anymore, and so I needed to bring somebody on with a complementary set of skills that could really work with me. The first person we brought on was Rui, who was an Asperger grad and a very unique individual with a very wide set of skills. And so he helped us with building a lot of the websites that we have today.
And is he with you today?
He is, yeah.
Wow, 10 years later.
Nine years
later. Okay, yeah, that's right, because it took you a little while to actually get started and stuff yeah. like this. So that's the first one you brought on.
That's right.
What was it like, of course I'm going right back to the early days, getting your first client?
Oh, that was definitely nerve-wracking. I mean, I'm an introvert by nature as well. So really the experience of going out there and networking with people, meeting with people and talking to them about what I can do to help them was, to say the least, a little uncomfortable. But, you know, as you get more comfortable with it and you have more conversations, you'll find those people that connect with you and give you that opportunity. And that's exactly what happened. So I met one person. He, you know, hired us to name a product and then develop a logo and then build a website. And then he introduced me to another person who, and then it goes on and on from there. So as long as you're doing good work for good people and you're charging a fair price and you're doing the right thing, then, it does happen. But I like what you said earlier. I find that a lot of businesses often get distracted with the operations of the business, which it obviously is important because it deals with the service of what you're doing. But that time away from business development is really... I think that's a crucial thing that most owners need to spend more time on. So.
Yeah, you know, so much stuff I read about business, it's like, are you working in your business or working on your business? I mean, those are really the two big statements, right?
Right.
And I know that we could probably talk a bit about when you made the transition from working in your business and working on your business. So maybe that's what we'll go in our next segment. This is Richard Land for Set for Success. I'm hanging out with Paul Provost, 6P Marketing, and we're going to continue our conversation celebrating their 10 years in business. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Hanging out with Paul Provost, 6P Marketing CEO. Just before the break, we were talking a little bit about the difference between working in your business and working on your business. And so, Paul, that's where I want to sort of kick off from our last segment. Because at some point in time, I'm going to say maybe you had a realization that you had to maybe work on your business as opposed to work in your business.
Oh, there's a lot to be said on this topic.
It's a huge topic.
It is a big topic, especially for people that start businesses. The process of scaling beyond yourself is a big deal. One thing that I talk about in this context is a board of advisors. It's just a separate entity that helps you along the way. And it's, you know, professionals that you might know or might not know. There are many organizations, from the Entrepreneurs Organization, the Alternative Board, to the Executive Council, that help on those fronts. There's also business coaches that help on that front, like Richard, who I know for many years. But the gist is, yeah, that's an important dynamic. But the working in your business and on the business is a very, very critical piece to the puzzle. One that even today with 20 employees, I'm still mindful of. I'm comfortable in most things in the business. I know how to do a lot of stuff. And it's a constant battle to, know where and when to get involved or not to get involved. But understanding that the more I get involved, the less ahead and the more less strategic I can be about the business. So But the key to it, to me, is having good people, is really surrounding you with people that complement your skills and that are better at the variety of things that need to be done. So, and that's really what we've, I think our biggest success is the people that we have. And just when it comes to the people, is just hiring for character and for their abilities. That's really, and their values before the skill. I mean, the skill will come. You can always teach certain things, but yeah. Having a good team of people around you that you want to go into work with is a great important thing.
I find a couple of things you said I find really quite interesting. One of them was you said about the values. So because I've had other CEOs say this to me too. When I hire people, I hire them for their values. Maybe you could expand upon that, what that means to you.
Well, I'm not an expert when it comes to this. What I'll summarize it to say is, you know, when you're hiring people, there's an instinct that you have about whether it's a good fit or not. You know, for me, it comes down to honesty, transparency, you know, about work ethic, their background, their education, they're telling me their stories of what they've done and why and how that goes. I find most people that I interview with find our interviews very unconventional. They're fairly casual as opposed to methodical. Yes, I have a script of sort of questions, but I always go off of it. But it's really just listening to them and hearing what they're all about and then aligning it with, you know, that seat on the bus that we're looking to fill. So
it's interesting you would say that, because I have a business associate of mine that always says all people are really looking for is a meaningful conversation.
Right.
And it sounds like that's what you're trying to do when you are interviewing potential candidates for your organization.
Right. Yep. Back to in and on your business, the challenge for me of late in the last few years has been, how do I get others to know what those values are that I've hired for? So how to set those values and help them understand what we're looking for so that I don't have to hire every single person that we're going to have to hire. So that sort of next layer of management and helping them understand those dynamics, which I believe they do, but it's something that I'm not practiced at. But over time, we've really... I've spent some time working on that dynamic, so it's an important one.
Yeah, and you're such a professional service organization. You know, I've worked with a lot of professional organizations, and really I fall into a similar field as yourself.
For sure.
And the biggest challenge often in the field is how do you distinguish yourself from someone else? Because it's not like I'm going to put myself in this area here, we create widgets, right? We don't manufacture something tangible per se, right? It's more of an intangible.
Right.
So how do you go about actually... and for yourselves, making that distinction for yourselves? What have you done over the years to do that?
One thing I always say is our assets walk out the door every single day. I mean, so you have to have a culture in an organization that really fosters that workplace culture, so to speak. So that's one thing that I think that we're a little different. And I know a fair amount about all the different, you know, professional services organizations, but I'm very proud of the team that we have and the workplace that we have. But in terms of positioning the organization... you know, the mix of services we provide and, you know, the approach that we take is also fairly different. We're very collaborative with our clients. We act a lot like an in-house marketing department for many of the clients that we work with. And we're never selfish when it comes to how to solve problems. If the client has a team of people, we'll complement them. So that's not a typical approach to working with businesses that we work with. So there's a complex maze of things related to that that kind of comes to play. And obviously within the 6 minutes or however many minutes we have, it's challenging to come back to, but it's an ever evolving piece to the puzzle.
Yeah, and I think you and I sort of have the same thought on this one. And I sometimes say to clients that, well, really, I'm your acting VP of strategic planning, leadership development. That's sort of what I take on, right? And I'm just part of your team, right? And I'm not trying to put this back on me. I'm just trying to relate it to what you're saying and saying that, you know, you probably have terms or approaches and that where really you're trying to connect with the organization that you're serving and you're really working to complement their team.
Correct.
Yeah, and that makes the distinction itself.
Yeah. And that's not typical. I mean, as much as I'd like to believe it should be that way, I don't think a lot of people or a lot of companies act that way. So
okay, I'm actually glad to hear you say that, because I think the same way. I think, well, doesn't everybody do this? Isn't this just normal? You know, but to actually hear that maybe is not the way is slightly refreshing, but not good. You know, I think that's the way it should be too. Over the years, you talked a little bit about advisors and that. How have you surrounded yourself with good people?
Well, I'm a part of the Alternative Board, okay, so that's so been one organization for the past 5 years. I think that's an important dynamic. The management team that we've put together, I'd like to say, is a fairly strong. We've been together now for, well, Tracy's our more recent one. She'd be 3 or 4 years. Brent, 7 years. Frank, 8 years. And Robert, we merged two agencies 2 years ago. So it's an experienced, good leadership team, and fundamentally the whole team is very good that way as well. So
okay, we're going to take a short break, and you said a very interesting word, merge a couple of teams. I think what I'd like to do is take off the next segment and just talk about growing your business through merging, right? Just some of the fundamentals in that respect. This is Richard Lanford, Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. We're having a great conversation about small business development today, and with my guest, Paul Provost. And just before the break, we were talking a little bit about, Paul, merger. You can't say words with me without picking. I'll pick something up, right? And I always know that for small business owners who are looking to grow their organization, it becomes one of the key fundamental questions. You know, do I join forces with another organization in order to grow my business? And it sounds to me like you did that at one point in time.
We did. Yeah. It was an interesting one. One that I was mindful of. In fact, when I started the business, I always thought that I would start it with a partner. I never thought that I'd do it on my own.
Okay.
And so I was always open to the idea of having somebody else come into the business with that sort of methodology. But it wasn't until late seven, eight, that we had a conversation together it was actually through the Manitoba Chambers of Commerce. We met through that. We both sponsored different components of it, and we had more and more conversations. And as time went on, we found that there were some beautiful synergies between the two companies. And we really looked for who we both were values wise and saw an alignment on that. And going through the checks and balances came to the consensus that working together would actually be better than not. So we complemented each other.
So now today, do you have a partner today in the business? Like, how's the business structured? Did one buy out the other, or is it sort of
we have a management team. Basically, the long version of it is my intention is to actually have an employee share ownership program where the entire company is actually shared amongst the entire team. But for the moment, it's me as the company president, and the executive team is another layer, and the whole team. I find it's a flat organization that way. So
yeah,
I operate it that way. We run with open book management systems, and it's.
What do you mean by open book management systems?
We share financials.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the employees know what the numbers and everything of the company.
Correct.
Are.
Yeah.
That's very interesting because not a lot of companies do that.
I know.
Why did you do that?
Well, I've been an employee and I've worked for other companies, and I felt that it was the right thing to do. I thought, I want to know how the business is doing. Are we doing good? Are we not? And I feel it's a two-way relationship. And in order for me to ask of others, I felt it was the right thing to do. So from day one, I've just been open on that. Now it's hard to share absolutely everything that goes on around there, because with 20 people, it's hard to keep everybody apprised. But it was something from day one that I believed in. So,
I think it would create some very interesting conversations, because first of all, you as the business owner need to be comfortable with doing that, right?
Yeah.
And as a business owner, it's 24/7. So there's always something on the line. This has been my experience with every single business owner I've ever had. And I'm a business owner too. So there's always something, right? And I guess the second part, and maybe there's a few parts to it, and you tell me, the employee's got to be comfortable with it.
Right.
Right, because you talked a bit about value and culture and everything earlier on. Do you ever find, are your employees comfortable with that conversation, everything, and knowing too, or has that ever been an issue?
I find different employees have different levels of engagement with the financial side of a business. But regardless of where they start and they stop, I believe they're better off by knowing it.
Okay.
And, if you're struggling, letting them know, hey, you know what, we have to pull our pants up a little bit and work a little harder right now. And when times are better, then they know that they're sharing the rewards. So it works both ways that way.
So. Yeah. So, and you've got a future plan for this too. Do you have any, I don't even know, should I ask you this on air? Do you have any timeline around when you want to start to make the change in the organizational structure you're talking about?
I don't have one, but the sooner the better in my book. It's a function of how much time I have available to invest in those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So it's very busy for us, and it always seems to be, but I'd say within the next couple of years.
Yeah. You talked earlier on some of the segments about we actually started this all off actually talking about working on your business as opposed to be in your business.
Right.
And you said a very interesting word that when I'm working on my business and other people are doing things, which is important, right, you have more time to be strategic. What does that mean to you?
Well, it means looking ahead. I use the parable of a sailing ship. If you're the captain of the ship and you're looking at the horizon, looking for where land is, you're ever mindful of that. Well, if you're mopping the deck or putting sails up, your mind is off of that. So I think there's a lot of, you have to surround yourself with people that are able to do the things that need to be done, and somebody needs to be looking ahead to make sure you're not running aground. So.
Yeah, okay. That's actually a good parable. I think that's a really great, great way to put it. Celebrating 10 years. Okay, a company should sell, I'm going to use the word celebrate again. The company should actually celebrate that, right? So I know there's other companies out there, and you and I during the break were talking about, I'm always looking for hidden gems and what they're doing in the economy, because I think it's just so important that we take the opportunity to celebrate the successes we have, the businesses that we have. Heck,
right.
The show is called Set for Success. Right. Why not, right? What are you guys doing to celebrate, and what can other organizations do to celebrate how long they've been in business?
It's interesting. We've helped a number of companies celebrate anniversaries, from Number 10 Architecture to Teshmont. More recently, we're helping Nelson River with their 95th. Ackman celebrated 100
years. 95 years, 100 years,
yeah,
right? Ackman, yeah. Wow, congratulations, guys.
Yeah. And but for ourselves, more recently, so this month, we're actually having an open house with some of our clients, our staff. We're setting up for having, hors d'oeuvres and just welcoming people into the office and enjoying ourselves. We did a 10-year logo. We're putting out a press release on the topic. We're, what else are we doing? Newsletter topics. We're sort of redecorating the office with some select imagery related to the 10 years. So there's a whole combination of things that we're doing in order to do it. But I think the highlight of it really is the open house, where we're going to, welcome the guests and sort of celebrate and say thank you for them.
Okay, so there's lots of things going on in that respect.
While we're working on the business and helping our clients, yes, it's a busy time.
Yeah, so that's your internal projects while you're actually putting it out there for the future. That sounds like a lot that an organization can actually do. You mentioned that you've helped a few other clients do this also. Bring us through that sort of process, because it would be part of their sort of overall, to me it sounds like it would become part of your overall marketing plan at some point, or a component of it.
Yep.
And it has a beginning, middle, and sort of an end, because there's a point where you have the celebration.
Yeah. Well, I think we start by figuring out options for them. Every company has a bit of a different culture and preference palette. So some will want more of a digital virtual version, and others want more physical party additions to celebrating. So it's really going through the ideas, letting them know what the sort of talking through what they mean, because most of them won't know really what's a celebration video, or, what do you mean by a party? What are we going to do about that? So there's a whole bunch of dynamics related to it. So we work with the client and identify some options for them and help them understand whether each one should be used in their particular case. So we've gone through this process with about a half a dozen businesses locally, and actually maybe even more than that, but it's an interesting process for us. But the end result is it's really for the client to decide what they want to do about celebrating that piece, and what they do internally, whether their own staff organizes the event or brings together the content for their web page, for their 10-year or 100-year page, or what have you. So we work together with the client and figure out what the best approach to it is.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of moving parts. I was cruising around your website. Okay, I can't help it. You got great content, by the way, and that. So a lot of blogs and things like this.
10 years worth,
10 years worth of information. And I do want to hit just sort of real quickly here the idea that I can't afford to market. Because sure. I think I saw one of those articles that talked a little bit
about
that.
It's a big topic with especially smaller businesses, but it's a big topic, financing, marketing, and whether how much to spend and how to do it. It's a big topic for sure.
It's a big topic for sure. So maybe what we can do is we should actually look at that topic a little bit when we come back, okay? This is Richard Land for Set for Success, and we'll be right back. Everyone, welcome back. I'm hanging out with Paul Provost, 6P Marketing CEO. Paul, just before the break, you and I were starting to talk a little bit about the whole concept of marketing. Shock, eh? Given what you guys do for a living, what your organization does. But when I'm out talking to small business owners and mid-range business owners too, and we're talking about different elements of their company, sometimes, like I said, I will hear the phrase, you know, well, I don't know what I should be doing for my marketing, or I can't really afford my marketing. So maybe we can sort of talk a little bit about that, because it sounds to me like it's almost like an objection that comes up, or maybe an unknown. I'm not sure.
Sure. Well, I think an important component to that is the mindset one has with regards to marketing, because a lot of people think of it as a cost of business, whereas it's more actually an investment in your business. What I mean by that is, when you spend money on marketing, it's really about future revenue, not about current revenue. So you can't always think of it in that way. Think of like a website. When you build a website, there's a fixed cost that you have to pay to somebody, yes, but the payoff period is often years worth of benefit. So you have to think about it in that same way. Is getting a new client isn't about, you know, it's about making the steps towards that, and it's not always thought of in a future-oriented tense that way. So that's the first thing I usually talk to people about, is making sure that they have the right frame of mind when it comes to their marketing. And yes, you have to be mindful of how much cash you have in the bank that you can afford. There's no doubt of that.
Sure.
But at the same time, there are other options in the marketplace that, if you have cash in the bank, BDC, local banks, they have financing options that are a lot more available today than they ever have been. And, you know, BDC offers $50,000 to $100,000 loans online applications. So it's very quick. In fact, we're a client to BDCs in that way. So we financed, as an example, a server. It's a $10,000 server that we got through the BDC. Same kind of idea that others can think of in the same context with their marketing. So financing marketing, there's many more options today than there ever have been. But
And that's actually quite interesting to hear, because, you know, as a small business owner, you don't always think about that maybe I could finance my marketing, or there's other things I could put my money into marketing and maybe use something like BDC, like you mentioned, for something else, and sort of freeze things up, right?
Which does a lot of good for you, because if you think about, if you have the smallest amount of dollar to spend on something, why would you do it on your future? So if you buy a car, would you want to go in with a very small budget, or would you want a nicer car? It's the same kind of principle when it comes to marketing. I find a lot of people think along those lines. But and the other thing is just, especially when you're a startup, a lot of people, networking and what you can do for yourself is so critical. So how many organizations are you a part of? You know, doing as much as you can to get out there and get the word of mouth and meet more people and introduce yourself to who your audiences are, that has a lot of benefit. And that's how we started. It was just me going out and meeting with one person and then another in organizations that I had no background in, and just got to meet no more people. And as time went on, they engaged us.
It's interesting you would say that, because as part of your marketing element, that whole area of networking should be part of your marketing. And you mentioned that previously, that you're an introvert by nature, right?
Correct.
I'm pretty sure you said on the show, or you know,
I did.
You just said it to me personally.
Nope.
But I like to try to encourage other introverts to do that, because often for introverts, was that a big challenge for you to sort of go out to these networking events, or...
Well, it went prior to starting the agency that I was more comfortable with it. But needless to say, that I'm not the charismatic type to walk into a room and feel totally comfortable. But as time went on, I got more and more comfortable. It takes practice, and it's just small steps lead to bigger ones. So.
I like that. Small steps do often lead to bigger ones. Going back to the whole idea of financing your marketing, or maybe the different types of questions. And one of the things, I know that you wrote an article that had something about benchmarking your marketing. And I don't even know if I'm phrasing it correctly, but I do know you should benchmark. So maybe we can talk a little bit about that and in terms of what you guys meant about
that. Well, I think there's two pieces to that. One is, when you're starting up, you have no revenue. So benchmarking about ain't somebody else that has no revenue doesn't help.
You have
to be very mindful of that topic. But knowing where you can go is very helpful. There's lots of ways to get industry statistics from local business centers like the World Trade Center or the Chambers of Commerce or even the BDC. I'm sure they have data on it as well. That just is, you can get benchmarking information online. In fact, there's this great article by the Wall Street Journal, published through Deloitte, that had a great number of stats on different industries, business to consumer and business to business, that I found very helpful to explain to entrepreneurs and even medium-sized business owners and large business owners really what they should be spending on marketing. And it, you know, it fluctuated between 3% and 10% kind of idea, but it just is very helpful article to have a context for what one could and should be spending on their marketing activities.
On their market, yeah. And I know in professional service organizations and some stuff I worked in, there's this rule of 50, 30, 20, right? And so that's one of the things you can apply to. And, you know, and yeah, now I guess I got to provide a little information on that, but the idea of 50%, this is more for the independent professional, 50% you pay yourself. 30% you can put into business development, or it sounds a little high, and then 20% admin, or back the other way, right? And so there's some concepts or thinking around that in that space too.
There's lots of ways to think about it, but and the other key piece is your gut. Is just you know, thinking about what you're able to afford and whether you're talking to somebody and it makes sense. I mean, you have to feel things out on that front as well. But there are benchmarking is good for sort of balance checking your gut on those sorts of things.
Yeah, and even, I mean, you mentioned about startup, but we could speak in terms of a business owner like yourself who has 20 employees, right? You've moved into that small to mid-range space, you know, depending on what economy you're talking about, right? So we're talking about more Manitoba here. You know, but you're starting to move into that space. You're working with organizations that need the service of that many employees. And so that's a whole thing. That's a whole thing. What a way to put that. celebrating. I want to go back to this for a second. I was reading something about you guys were nominated for an award. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we were just recently nominated for the Small Business of the Year Award through the Manitoba Chambers of Commerce. So that event is happening on October 27th. We'll find out whether we're winners of it. But the dynamic there, again, to, you know, sharing in that success and the culture of the organization, I put a call out to the employees as to who would want to attend that event, you know, with the purpose of if everybody wants to go, I'm going to be buying a table for everybody. So about half the company was able to attend. And we're also inviting a select number of our key partners to join us as well. So we'll share in that celebration together, hoping we win.
So. Yeah, hoping you win. I guess you'll find out at the evening of that event.
Correct.
If somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that?
Well, best way is through our website, where there's a lot of great articles on tips for marketing and helping entrepreneurs and business leaders on their businesses. But yeah, just going through our website and using the contact forms is usually the best way to go about it.
So what's your website address?
www.6pmarketing.com.
Yeah, 6pmarketing.com. By the way, I have to say, I like the name of your company, right? Yeah. 6P. Now, I know I learned the 4Ps and stuff. Real quickly, why 6Ps?
Well, I noticed that a lot of businesses, you know, you get through voicemail jail and whatnot, and there was no passion in it. So I noticed that people and passion had a big component to marketing when it came to the success of a business. And so I thought the theory of marketing with the 4Ps was missing those 2 pieces. So that's why we named it 6P.
Oh, there you go. Paul, great, great show. I've always loved having you on as a guest. And by the way, I know the last time was 2014, so it was a while ago. But even just sort of meeting you at different events and stuff like this and just having a chance to chat with you, you're always so very engaging. So really great. And I think your company is too. So a lot of stuff. If you had a final thought for our listeners, what might it be?
Well, we're topic of growing a business. I think there's 2 key components. One is your cash flow management is key, but the other one is just a continuous investment in business development. And whether it's investing in networking and sponsorships and getting out there versus getting caught up in your business and the operations that go on. So just being hyper mindful of that topic.
Wow. I think that's great, great advice. You've been listening to Set for Success, and Paul, I really appreciate you joining me today. I really thank you very much for coming to hang out, because I know you're a busy guy. Listeners, I know you're tuning in and everything. I always appreciate it when you actually listen to the show, connect with us. And by all means, if you have a thought, a question, an idea for a guest or a topic, send me an email at richard@setforsuccess.ca. And please do remember to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.